Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 560. It's the 16th of August 2016. On the podcast today, I have Chairman and CEO of Thor Mining, ticker THR. It's Mick Billin, discusses their new drill program. I also have Doc Holliday, Small Cap Authority, talks about Andalas Energy and Power, ADL, Norcom Gold, NMG, and Paternoster Resources, PRS. And on the podcast, shareholder activist Ben Turney explains how investors can take action if they believe the directors of the company they're invested in are not acting within shareholders' interests. Also on the podcast, the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. And I've got to say, I've had three of the companies on the podcast who appear in the top five today, and we do intend to get the other two. So any company that appears in the top five, we do approach to get on the podcast. And do you know what we're finding? If companies consistently appear in the top five, it seems that their share price is performing. And of course, there's no freak accident here. Of course, there's a correlation. These are the most popular stocks. But what I'm saying is, this is a good gauge of sentiment. You know, when a company appears in the top five, especially number one, they're probably worth following and adding to your watch list. I'll go through those in a bit. Also, I have today's one for your watch list suggested by listening to the show. It's Providence Resources, PVR. I'll go through the reasons why that's been chosen in a few minutes.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chairman and CEO of Thor Mining, ticker THR, Mick Billin. Hi, Mick. Thanks for coming back on.
Hi, Justin. Nice to talk to you and your listeners once again.
Yeah, and I think, do you know what, at the moment, we're probably competing with you guys over there for in the weather stakes, because we're having some nice weather. What's it like over there?
Today we had, in Adelaide, about 21 degrees. The sun was out. It's still winter, but spring's starting to rear its head, and we're all pretty chuffed about that.
Wow, that's winter. I got to say, point out that's winter. I mean, it's summer here. We're about 2 or 3 degrees hotter than that. That's all. But at least it's not raining, Mick. You know what I'm saying? So that's a good thing. Mm. Okay, Mick. Well, you've been on the podcast a couple of times, but there are new listeners joining all the time. So to give them the benefit of, the chance to look at the company, can you explain in about a minute as to what Thor Mining's all about, please?
Yes, yeah, certainly, Justin. Happy to. We at Thor are essentially in the tungsten business. We have a project in the Northern Territory, Australia, close to the our Red Centre, and also a tungsten project in Nevada, roughly halfway between Vegas and Reno. The project in Australia is quite advanced, and we say it is development ready. It has a resource of about 4.5 million tonnes of pretty good grade tungsten with a bit of molybdenum in it also. We've done the feasibility study, done all the metallurgical test work, got all the agreements from the traditional owners and the environmental people. This is shovel ready, and we hope that a little tick up in the tungsten price in the next little while might trigger a bit of project finance, and off we go. The finance required for Molly Hill is about $40 million, which is more than I have in my back pocket. But it's in project finance terms is not too big a heap. The project in Nevada, slightly less advanced. There are four known deposits there. We have a resource estimate of about 6.5 million tons on one of those. The others need a bit of confirmatory drilling to follow up on work done about 40 odd years ago, to be honest, before they can be turned into resources. But we think it's a good project. We like it, and we think it has the potential to be a long-term tungsten operation, but it's probably several years away from being development ready.
Okay, marvellous stuff. And can you, at the Molly Hill mine there, you mentioned the feasibility study. Can you put some figures on that, please, Mick?
Yeah, sure, Justin. We've the net present value at the time when we did the study and did the last update, February last year, was about 70 million Aussie on Well, I guess in pounds, that's probably about £40 million at the current exchange rate, but that changes as we know. It has a six-year life, it's relative, and the processes for producing the concentrate are pretty standard mineral processing techniques that are commonly used around the world. There's nothing groundbreaking in what we plan to do. It is a little remote, so we've got to fly the workforce in and out and things of that nature. But apart from that, it will be a small but pretty regular mining operation.
Okay, and you yesterday in an RNS, you released a new drill program. Explain why, Mick, and what you hope to achieve here.
Yeah, sure. The tungsten and molybdenum mineralisation at Molly Hill is hosted in a magnetite skarn. And magnetite, as most people will be aware or perhaps may not be aware, will have a magnetic signature if you apply the right sort of geophysics to it. And Molly Hill was discovered about 4 years ago by some people who followed up on some nearby outcropping tungsten and went looking for more and finally drilled this magnetic, what we call a magnetic anomaly. And Molly Hill was discovered then. Now, we've got on our exploration lease within several kilometres of Molly Hill a number of magnetic anomalies that look quite similar to Molly Hill. So we're quite confident that there'll be magnetite in those anomalies. We certainly hope there'll be tungsten and moly, and this initial drill program is there to test just that. It's a relatively shallow drilling program, about 50 holes. All we're planning to do in the first instance is punch through the sedimentary or alluvial cover above the rock. The drill bit will hopefully go a metre or so or half a metre or so into the rock. We'll then be able to test that for probably initially relatively low levels of tungsten mineralisation using a hand-held XRF analysing machine that we'll take with us. So we'll be able to test the ground immediately, and if it's negative, we'll move on to the next site. If it's positive, we'll tighten up the program and punch a couple of more holes in very close to almost immediately.
Okay,
so this low cost exploration.
Yeah, and when is this happening? Is this happening straight away, or?
I would hope. The plan is for the program to start next week, and Justin and I expect it will. I don't like to announce an exact day because the driller might get lost on his way, or something might go awry. He might be delayed for a day or so, and we will certainly update the market once the program has started. But at this stage, it is due to commence in the week after this one.
Okay, and how long, Mick, does it take to get sort of results back here?
Well, the assays, because we're using this portable XRF unit, we'll have the results immediately within 10 or 15 minutes of the completion of each hole. Anything that does have a hit of a tungsten or moly, we will then take a sample and send it off to labs for more conventional assays, but the XRF equipment that we will have with us on site will give us a very, very quick and a reasonably accurate site up.
Okay, and I know you keep a keen eye on the tungsten price there. What's your thoughts, Mick?
Justin, I think there are green shoots for our industry, as I think there are for a number of other commodities. The tungsten price went up quite nicely in the first half of the year. It settled back a bit in July, and as it occasionally does with people in the northern hemisphere closing their factories down for the summer break. But it didn't go back too much, and I think there's certainly hope and half an expectation that come September it should start to sneak up again.
Yeah. Anyway, the share price reacted nicely yesterday to the news, so that was quite good. But Mick, listen, we got this top five right on the Vox Markets website, and essentially it's the top five most followed companies, and we've seen companies that consistently hit, position one. Yeah, pretty much has a positive effect on the share price because you get lots of people following it, and the stock builds, the interest builds in that stock. So, if you could give now three reasons why someone should follow you on the Vox Markets watch list, what would it be? What would the three reasons be, Mick?
Justin, I think people should be watching for the results of this drilling. I think we will have them quite quickly, and this could be to some extent the start of a change of a game change for Molly Hill. If we can increase the resource at Molly Hill, if we can increase the resource inventory, we can increase the rate of throughput at Molly Hill. We can drop our costs without seriously increasing our costs. That's obviously a good thing to do. So I think people should really look for the results of this drilling, but they should also start watching our stock, and we'll let you know when there's an uptick in the tungsten pricing, and as well as I'm sure a number of others will also. And finally, what we didn't dwell on tonight was that our fund position will be freeing up in the next little while because we've got $1.5 million Aussie dollars due from the sale of a gold project. Now, that's due in 6 months' time. We'd like to bring that forward because there's things we'd want to spend that money on, and people should watch for news of that in the next little while.
Marvellous. Well, listen, if that doesn't get people hitting the follow button on Thor Mining on Vox Markets, I don't know what will. Mick, lovely to chat to you again. Speak again soon, fella.
Justin, thanks very much. Have a good day.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Authority of Small Caps. It's Doc Holliday. You're right, Doc.
Morning. How are you?
I'm all right, it's a nice fine day. I haven't looked out really, though. It seems a nice day for where I am, in my little box here, in front of the mic. And what are the stocks you're looking at, Doc? What are the stocks tickling your fancy?
There's a bunch of them. Andalas Energy have put out an announcement pointing to the chairman's blog. It was a company you and I had spoke quite a lot about recently and in the past.
I can't find his blog. Have you found it? I went to the website, I looked around, I couldn't find the blog. Did you find it? You managed to find it, have you?
Yes. It's all posted out. If you just pop onto my Twitter account, it's there.
Okay.
Basically points to the chairman's working background, both as executive vice president of Talisman Energy, covers in the countries, continents that Paul's worked on, and actually touches on Paul's appointment as president of Gulf Indonesia Resources back in 2001, and how he became the president of ConocoPhillips Indonesia after seeing the merger between the two companies. So, if you actually look at the size of business this guy's been doing, I think he supervised production delivery excess of 450,000 barrels of oil production. He's got all of the kind of big game feel going for it, and I think the company felt that it was relevant to point towards that. I've obviously been taking down notes from the presentation when the company readmitted to trading a little while ago. I think much of that was overlooked, the fact that there's quite a substantial amount of money have been deposited into a number of different banking facilities out in Indonesia to finance these gas to power developments, and I think that's very much where the company are. They've also announced the Pertamina joint venture, and if you go back to the admission document or you look at December 2015, you'll see that the company are also in talks for 1,700 barrels of oil a day production at SIAC, which again is with Pertamina. Looking at the relationship that Whitby's got in country and actually Paul Warwick's history, I don't think it's going to be a big surprise if the company were to come out and say, yeah, we've done a deal with Pertamina, we've got some kind of bank finance facility, and we've got all the relevant authorities passed, because the ministry have already stated that for projects under 100 megawatts, that they don't need to go through, you know, the bureaucracy and jump through hoops in order to get permitting to get cracking. So I can see there's going to be a number of catalysts to get ADL going. Still, you know, languishing at sort of this level. I think once it breaks higher than 20, that's when the game really starts to kick off, and we naturally will be looking for confirmation from the company, really, via an official line, an RNS of sorts. So let's wait and see what they say, but it's definitely a standby bet moment as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for that share price. It keeps me, you know, you'll see it, you know, go up like 7% in a day, then all of a sudden end up 1% down, then it all of a sudden makes some ground the next day. It needs to break this trading range, doesn't it? It's been, you know, banging its head on is it 0.16, I think, for a while now. You need to get above that, but yeah. Hopefully a bit of news will do that. All right, anything else you've been looking at, Doc?
Yeah, I had a quick chat to Greg Kunzel.
Yeah.
I was calling him Greg Kunzel, but it's Kunzel, I believe. I had a chat to Greg, not spoke to him for a little while. I actually haven't followed the story in any great detail. I put some notes up on the Vox Markets chat board on Norricum, and you can find it there. It was basically a bit of a chat before he travelled out to Georgia with the operational and technical team. So he's in transit on his way out there. The company, again, knees are languishing due to the virtue that investors believed they were going to get in Q3, Q4, a modest production from the company, as this is what they'd suggested. On doing some further drilling and development study work, the company allegedly have stumbled across what they believe to be a pretty significant resource of up to 400,000 ounces. The company believes that this has been missed by the Soviets, who had gone into Georgia, Azerbaijan, and many of those surrounding countries, and literally with just a scattergun went and drilled holes everywhere. They believe that the data that was interpreted has been missed. They've gone into a similar region. There are commercial mines within, I think it's about a 10-mile radius of Norricum's asset. They've drilled into the ground, and they believe they found a really significant resource that they believe now they want to try to advance. If they go and mine this, it's basically a hill or a bank in land. It's open pit mining. If they go and start mining the cap, the gold cap, which sits on top, they believe it may have an adverse effect on the gold copper deposit, which they believe is far, far superior, lying below. So the technical team are going back out there. They're going to do some drilling, and they're actually going to run. They're going to get a bit more data to develop on. So naturally, it's left some investors feeling a bit disappointed. Greg is smiling like a Cheshire cat if some of what we believe coming out of the city is to be true. You know, I did ask the question, what makes this any different than the last time? There was a lot of kind of promise and hype around Austria when they were operating out there. It delivered very little. It disappointed many. And he was quite frank in his response, and that was pretty much down to the fact that the speed of developing that existing mine and asset that they'd gotten out in Austria was just going to be so slow that they just... It just wasn't viable to proceed with it. It was a historical deposit which they were looking to try and get back into production. You know, I think in the early 1900s they were mining out in Austria, and they just couldn't get things going. He was quite honest about it and open. I think there's going to be doubters out there for Greg and the team. I think he's aware of that. One of the significant sort of changes here is that this asset was looked at by Lundin. It didn't go ahead. One of the major investors who's come into Norricum, joined the board, has sunk quite a bit of his own money in, and they really are pursuing this. I would probably hazard a guess that investors want to see it in black and white before they buy into the story again, because I think that, you know, there's some legacy of disappointment that lies within. But if it's anything to go by, this deposit and the size of it, and the way it's being referenced, it could be potentially quite a material mine should they get it to production. It's open pit, it's dead easy, you know, it's scooping it up, it's putting it into a machine, a plant. They wash it, separate it, and you get your ore from there. You know, it's not, we're not talking about deep crevasses, you know, in, you know, underground, hundreds of meters down. It's on the surface. It's pretty straightforward. It's one of the oldest forms of mining in the world, and one of the easiest. So we'll see. We'll see how that one goes. But it's a bit of an update for anybody who's interested in Oracle.
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean, like I said, when the RNS came out about that, I saw a couple of people say, "Oh, this is, they're never going to start producing anything here. They're just again delaying it and just extending their in exploration." But as to what you said there, the conversation there, and sort of reading what Greg said in the RNS there, he just says, you know, the strategy hasn't changed, only the potential size of the opportunity, which has forced a change in focus. So, you know, you've got to sit and wait and see if he's a man of his word there, I suppose, and see if he goes ahead with that. And but you can understand some people being disappointed. The share price has come back, so you could say maybe an opportunity. It's going into sort of buy zone support level here. All right, anything else you're looking at, Doc, there?
Yeah, it's a company that I've looked at over the years, Paternoster Resources. There's been a change in the board structure. Amanda Van Dijk has joined the company. Obviously, this company have had some good sizable gains in the past, but it seems to, the price has just seemed to have eroded for quite some time now, which naturally leaves long-term investors quite disappointed. And I think there's a real argument from their side as to why they should expect more from the company, given the fact that the net asset value of the business is somewhere between sort of 3.5 and 4 million pounds. You know, they've got liquid assets that they can, you know, unlock, you know, and realize some of that cash. To be trading at £1 million market cap just seems pretty mental. So what we often see with these investment companies, they'll trade at a discount to the NAV of, you know, 30, 40, even 50%. This one's trading at sort of a 70, 75% discount. That suggests that the market doesn't really buy the assets, or in actual fact, recognize the cash position of this business. One of the sort of catalysts for me to revisit this was when Amanda joined the company, and you saw them just take a significant stake in another business to get control of that shell, is that these guys are going to take a change in direction. They've got a material interest in Metal Tiger. I think they've made over £1 million to date from an investment in Metal Tiger, which has gone up something like 6 times the multiple. So they have done some decent business. They've seen some pretty big gains sort of evaporate as well. They had a big position at MXO, I think it was at 1p or 0.75p, something like that. Again, I'd have to revisit my notes to look. But, you know, this is, and that obviously went up 5 or 6 times. So the company have done some pretty decent business, but as a whole, the market isn't recognizing that. So, you know, there's a number of reasons why I've revisited and looked at PRS again. A, because there's a massive discount to the NAV against the liquid position, that if they unlock it, there could be a great deal of cash. They've just taken over yet another shell company. They've changed the board structure. I think this company now is probably going to go into a direction where they unlock all of the cash and go and stick it into one business and vend it into PLMO and Paternoster. I think you'll start to find them shape up and aim in a direction, because after 4 years, it's quite apparent that the market, they're just not valuing these companies. They don't seem to like them. And as a result of that, the valuation seems massively disconnected. So, you know, had the board not changed, you might just say it's the same old, but I think there's going to be changes afoot, and on that basis, it's worth certainly putting on your watch list.
Yeah, well, I took a few of these because they hit the price alert. I mean, they're at an all-time low, like you said. I read through their financial results from last year quickly, and that net asset value, 2.9 million, and net asset value share price fully diluted, 0.32. And I, even then, when they were back 0.185, they were 42% discount to the NASDAQ. So, you know, you can see. And now that it's what, 0.14, I think I bought them for. So, yeah, it just on.
You've got to factor into that though. I think there's been changes in the value of their investments in a number of companies. So you look at the valuation of perhaps Metal Tiger to when the NAV was generated, you know, and other investments that the company have made. Naturally, they've got a pretty chunky investment in New World Oil and Gas, which is obviously in the process of vending in the big sulfur company, and Adam Reynolds. You know, if that sorts to, you know, if that has any sort of synergies to other business that Reynolds has done with Opti, and more recently with it was Frontier Resources, but it changed its name. You look at the gains that these companies have had, you know, they've had sort of 8-10 times the money. So if you assume that New World Oil and the new company is gonna go higher rather than lower, then you would suggest that chunky investment that PRS have got into that company is gonna again start to yield further returns. But, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, and I'm just looking through their portfolio. They've got Plutus Power Gen as well in there. Yeah, so and several others I've not heard of, but there we go. Marvellous, Doc. Love to chat to you. Speak again soon, fella.
All right, take care, mate. See you soon.
The Box Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ben Turney. I suppose a lot of people will know you, Ben, from writing lots of articles, but you're, more presently, I suppose, a shareholder activist, aren't you?
I suppose I am, Justin. Thanks very much for having me today.
That's all right. So at the moment, I've got to explain. I mean, we've often, you know, you've been on the podcast before for lots of things, but I know you from New World Oil and Gas. And let's go through what happened there. Can you take us through exactly what it, you know, where it was at and what you did and where it is now? I know it's in a bit of a mess there, but what happened there? For example, when people hear the phrase shareholder activist, what have you done? This goes through a working example here of New World Oil and Gas. What happened there?
Yeah, okay, let's. I mean, obviously, I'd much rather not go over last summer's pain and the whole Ford selling fiasco. So perhaps we could talk a little bit more about what happened after that, and then how the action group that we ran, how that evolved into a more positive force for change within the company. Well, just to remind people, obviously, last summer, New World Oil and Gas was a raging controversy after what happened with that placement. For better or worse, the company found itself then in a position where it had substantially recapitalized itself. I think in the end they raised $3.5 million before costs. But of course, the old board of directors was still in place. Now, I don't think anybody in their right mind on either side of the Ford selling controversy would have had the slightest bit of faith in those guys that they would have done anything serious with that money other than completely waste it. So it was clear to us that although we'd lost, I suppose, what happened in the end with the Ford selling episode, there was still a chance to do something with the company. So everything had calmed down by around about late August, early September. Yeah, so just over a year ago. But we still had a number of shareholders who were committed to seeing some form of return on their investments. So we reformed the group. We knew that the company had an annual general meeting that was coming up. And because of particular articles under Jersey law, as members of the company, what that basically means is that we had our stock in certificated form. So our number and our names appeared directly on the shareholder register. We were able to nominate directors to join the board, or to be voted on to join the board, with a view obviously of taking New World in a new direction. So the group that I was running, NWOG Action, we put forward Adam Reynolds as our candidate for shareholders to vote on. He was voted in with an overwhelming majority with a massive mandate for change, and was meant then to take New World in a new direction.
Yeah, and that happened. So what happened? So obviously you contacted Adam yourself, did you personally? And then he looked at it and did several meetings with him, and what happened there?
Yeah, well, I was put in touch with Adam. Adam's name was suggested to me. I was put in touch with Adam. I think, you know, we struck off a reasonable rapport from the beginning. I told him a bit about the history of New World, but of course, I mean, what he was far more interested in was the future of New World. At the time, the company's share price was trading at a discount to its cash value, and there was quite a substantial amount of cash there. So Adam's obviously built up an excellent reputation over recent years for turning desire disastrous cash shell situations around. The difference this time is that rather than moving into a company which was on the verge of going bust, Adam managed to inherit a business with, you know, a very healthy cash balance, which obviously enables him then to look at introducing a much more substantial opportunity than one that he might have done with some of his other companies. So from the beginning, it made a great deal of sense to him. We were very confident that he would act in shareholder interests. So as a group, we were happy to put his name forward for other shareholders to vote on.
Marvellous. And at the moment, what is it? It's a big sofa.
That's the deal that he's brought in. Now, I mean, of course, you know, we got to last September and Adam won the vote, but, you know, as is often the case with these things, it didn't work out exactly as we initially hoped it would. Unfortunately, we did make one big mistake, and looking back now, you know, I think we all put our hands up to that, and we left three of the old board of directors in situ. So they outnumbered Adam and Nick Lee, who also joined the board from Paternoster Resources last year. They outnumbered Nick Lee 3-2. And cut a long story short, I mean, I think I'm safe in saying this now, because it was, you know, this is all in the past and I don't think this is inside information anymore, but, you know, those old directors, they really did drag their heels. The big sofa deal had been ready to go since around about late January, early February, from what I understand. But the old directors were, who knows what their motivation was. I've got my suspicions why they behaved as they did, but we got to this summer, so middle of June, end of June time, and it was quite clear that, you know, that our job as an action group wasn't finished. So we got together our stock into certificated form. We called an EGM. The board had 3 weeks within which to call that EGM before we could go ahead and call it ourselves to get rid of the old three directors, and they all walked the plank the day before the final deadline. So since then, we've all stood down, and from what I understand, Nick Lee and Adam Reynolds have carried on pushing ahead. New World is still in suspension, and what we're now waiting for is a readmission document concerning the big sofa deal. At this stage, I've got very high hopes for it. Haven't spoken with Adam and Nick. They both seem, you know, very excited about it, and I can't wait to read in the readmission document, you know, more of the details, so that we as shareholders can make a final decision that this is what we definitely want to happen with our company.
Yeah, okay. So what are you involved with at the moment?
At the moment, well, I've had two recent actions since New World. I had a fairly easy one, which was basically only on social media, where we managed to get rid of Stephen Clayson out of ECR. There's a whole backstory there still to be revealed at some point. I think I might even have to set up a new blog, I think, in the not too distant future, because there are a number of things people need to be aware of, what happened behind the scenes. But he had his future told to him after he did one or two things he shouldn't have done, and he's due to go in 2 weeks' time. So that one didn't end up being a formal action group, but, you know, I managed to get him out fairly quickly. But the other action group that I've run that became a formal action group was with Tethers Financial.
Yeah.
So I'm now currently an executive director of Tethers Financial, which lost its listing at the start of June, but trying to turn that business around and, you know, out of the wreckage that was left by the previous board, try and salvage some value for shareholders.
So how does that manifest itself? What are you going to do? What do you hope to do? You know, ideally, what's the hope here?
Ideally, what's the hope? Well, I mean, there are two questions there. How do we do it, and what's the hope? In terms of how, it's been a huge amount of work. I mean, it's been far more work than I anticipated. Actually getting behind the reins of one of these companies and seeing from the inside what can actually happen within a small PLC, and I've got to be honest, it's pretty shocking. We've promised shareholders we're going to do a full warts and all report once we've got full control of the company's information system, and we're nearing completion of that, so we're hoping to get that out in a couple of weeks' time. Once we've provided that report to people, they'll know exactly what's happened with their company, they'll know what's left within their company, and then at that stage I think we'll be facing a simple choice between either just winding the company up and returning whatever funds are left to shareholders, or, I'll be honest, my preference is the second option, or to try and pursue the app which the company had been pursuing to allow private shareholders the opportunity to participate in placements. It's quite a novel idea. It's an idea that they had a broker partner in Shard Capital. They put six deals through it at the start of this year, but for whatever reason, lost momentum. But it strikes me that they actually could still be a business opportunity to pursue in this. And my hope is that as a private company, we'll be able to take the Tethers app forward. And that might be something we could talk about in future, Justin.
Yeah, cool. All right, so you've got a bit of a name now, so you must get, you know, a couple of people approaching you, a bit peeved off with the performance of the company they're in. And do you get people approaching you quite a lot now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm easy to contact via Twitter. My name is Ben Turney on Twitter. I think it's Ben-Turney. So yeah, I've had quite a few people get in touch about a number of different companies. There are a few action groups that I'm looking at the moment. To be honest, I've got my plate full with Tethers for the foreseeable future. So I'm trying not to take on any more commitments just yet, because it is absolutely the right thing to do that we get Tethers absolutely sorted first. But there are, I mean, look, let's face it, the standard of management on AIM, certainly among the smaller companies, is pretty much it's abysmal across the board. So there are all sorts of companies out there whose shareholders are understandably very peeved at the way their businesses have been run. So
So what do they do? For example, let's say someone approaches you, you just haven't got time in your hands. I mean, you know, but they're determined to get this sorted because the company they're investing in has been run, you know, like you said, abysmally. What do they do? What's the action they can take?
Well, I'm always happy to have a chat with someone about an action group they may wish to set up. And I've had, over the last few months, I've had probably about a dozen or so different conversations of an hour or two with people, just to give them some tips and advice of, what to do and where to look. But I think there are five main points to look at if you're thinking about setting up an action group. The first thing you can do, and this is something you can do on your own, is you need to look at where the company is registered and also what the company's legal documentation is. So specifically, if you own stock in a company that is registered in somewhere like the British Virgin Islands or a tax haven somewhere, I'm afraid to say you've got almost no chance of realistically being able to form an effective shareholder action group. So that's one of the first boxes to tick, is to make sure that your company is ideally owned within the jurisdiction of the laws of England and Wales, or possibly Jersey, possibly the Isle of Man, although with both Jersey and the Isle of Man and Guernsey, the thresholds for shareholder activism, so the percentages you require, are actually a bit higher. Under UK law, it is much easier to pursue an action.
Yeah, because I've seen quite a few, you read through sort of RNSs, I've seen quite a few companies, that are sort of based in Jersey, kind of thing. And so that they do that essentially because of that, or why?
Yeah, I think, it's part of the reason.
I suppose.
The thing is, if we think the AIM authorities are bad at regulation, just you try and see, what the Jersey authorities are like. I think that's one of the big motivations, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying something like that, but to be honest, I'm past the point of caring with those people. Mm. One of the main reasons is that in terms of the threshold that's required to call an EGM, so an extraordinary general meeting, to seek replacement of directors. Under English and Welsh law, you only need 5% of the stock, whereas under Jersey law, you need 10%. So the threshold requirement is, that's quite a big step up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a huge amount, really. I mean, because if you are, like I said, a shareholder who doesn't know any other shareholders, I suppose social media helps, but, it's a case of where do I start,
Well, this is it. I mean, one of the things that I've found with the groups I've been involved in and the groups I'm aware that seem to be forming at the moment is that thanks to social media, it's actually much easier now for shareholders to get together. So, for example, with the Tethers group, my colleague Stuart, who formed that group, I mean, pulled together a huge number of people. Yeah. In terms of the percentage of stock they owned, actually fairly easily. He did an excellent job with it. But then sort of having then got that group together, it was a question of, well, okay, what do we actually now do next? Mm-hmm. And that's why I got asked in to help out with that group, given my experience with New World. The thing is, none of this stuff is actually rocket science. It is all fairly straightforward. It just requires a fairly organized and rigorous approach. But assuming that you can take the group that you have, get organized in the right way, you can actually turn these groups of people into pretty effective fighting forces, as we've now seen with the groups that I've run over the last 12 months.
Okay. Marvellous. Yeah. And so let's be honest. So next step, for example, you should. I don't know if you've got on your site, but you should have a list of almost connection points. A hub of dissatisfied shareholder groups, maybe.
Exactly.
Have you got that?
Not yet is the answer. It's something I'm planning on launching in the autumn. I'm planning on setting up an activist website, which will be a blog of some of the things I've done, which will give just a bit of an insight into some of the pitfalls of the processes, just to give people an idea of some first-hand experience. But I'm also going to include on there some general advice for action groups about how they can get themselves organised, what they need to look for, and then how the procedures that they then have to follow to be able to fulfil their objectives. And one of the early things that that I think people often overlook is to go and look at the service contracts of directors. Now, this is typically the second step that I'll do, mm-hmm. I'll take when running a group, because the service contracts of directors, they're available to members of the company. So again, that's people with their stock in certificated form. And Justin, I mean, I've looked at several dozen of these things now over the last 12 months, and they can contain all sorts of nasty surprises, from termination fees and really long notice periods to allowing directors to sue for damages in the event that they're removed from office by an EGM. Now, the reason, of course, this is very significant is that if you've got a little AIM company whose board are costing, let's say, £250,000 a year, well, if you blunder in with an action group, you could well find that there's on the balance sheet an additional £250,000, £300,000, £400,000 worth of liabilities relating to getting rid of the board of directors. It's something that people often overlook, but it can be, quite a serious millstone around a company's neck.
Yeah, and where do they find that? If they want to find that service contract, where do they find those?
They can write to the company and request either to go and see them at the company's registered office, or typically the company's solicitor will have a copy. So normally I tend to suggest that people write a letter, do it the traditional way, and cite obviously the relevant bits of the Companies Act, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but again, I'd be more than happy to point people in the right direction. And then at that point, the company is obliged to respond to that within a fixed period of time. From memory, I think it's 3 weeks. At that point, then the shareholders can go and actually see exactly what their company has signed up to in terms of service contracts. I'm not sure. Are we allowed to talk about ADVFN? Is that a topic that's okay on this show?
You can if you want. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, well, it's very interesting. If you look at the ADVFN management team's service contracts, they've got termination clauses in there of 36 months.
Well, that's nice if you can get it, isn't it?
Yeah, very nice.
So basically, if you get sacked, you still get paid for, 3 years?
Yep.
And what, there's nice no way, and there's no way around that, is there?
Well, there are ways around it, but, I mean, obviously it's a legally issued contract, but it doesn't necessarily mean, getting into a legal fight. It's, there are all sorts of other weapons that an activist group would have at its disposal, not least the power of social media.
Yeah. Well, listen, Ben, rather than talk any further, you should put these points on your website there. So before people actually get you involved, try to get you involved, just say, listen, read these points first, and then if you've got something going there, come back to me. Because you must, like I said, you must get a lot of people approaching you. Do you have these little bits on your website?
Not yet. As I say, I'm planning on launching it in September. The website's going to be called ionaim.net. Okay. There's nothing up there at the moment, but that is the site that I'm planning on launching later this year, once I've got tethers out of the way. And, it will be free for everybody to look at.
Yeah, marvellous. Ben, thanks for coming on. And listen, once you've got some news on what's happening currently with tethers and stuff, come back on and you can update us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Justin.
Okay, today's top 5 most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours are as such. At 5, EVRH Holdings, of course, very strong share price recently. At 4, Prospect Oil and Gas, BXLG. Ed was on the podcast recently. At 3, CloudTag, CTAG. If you want them on the podcast, put some pressure on the management. They're doing quite well, very popular stock. But I would like to get them on the podcast. And we've made approaches. But please, apply a bit of pressure and we'll get them on. At 2, Ithaca Energy, IAE. And number 1 on the podcast yesterday, Brian McMaster, of Harvest Minerals, HMI, most followed stock. And that's, I think, three times now it's been number one. And look at the share price strength there. HMI, number one, most followed company on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. Okay, today's one for your watch list is suggested by listening to the show is Providence Resources, PVR. What does the company do? Providence Resources is an Irish-based oil and gas exploration company with a portfolio of appraisal and exploration assets located offshore Ireland. Providence's shares are quoted on AIM in London and on ESM in Dublin. How many shares does the company have in issue? 597 million. What's the current price and market cap? 58 million market cap, 9.75 pence share price. What does the company... What revenue and profit or loss does the company generate? None at the moment, still exploring. How much cash or debt does the company have? No debt. And at December 31st, 2015, total cash and cash equivalents were 6.5 million euros. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, having completed a successful $70 million fundraise, the company is debt-free with a strong balance sheet and in a position to drill in the Porcupine Basin next year, and the assets are genuinely worth looking at. Number two, share price is at an all-time low. Number three, potential return is significant. They have around 358 million barrels of oil equivalent net audited 2C contingent resources and 4,792 million barrels of equivalent of gross unrisked prospective resources. So that's Providence Resources, PVR. Sorry, I was looking at something else then. Providence Resources, PVR. Add it to your watch list. Do some research. I've got this on my watch list. I think it's a very interesting company. They've got a, you know, it's an amazing sort of assets there. And going forward, could have significant upside potential. But listen, do not take my word for it. Please do your own research on this, all right? And you start off by adding it to your watch list. Just hit follow. Go to, you know, Vox Markets, type in PVR and hit follow. Thank you very much for suggesting that. And by all means, if you know of a stock worth putting on people's watch lists, suggest it. And I'll bring it to a bigger audience. And sometimes that's all a stock needs, you know, a good stock. Thanks very much for listening. Much appreciated. So before you go, don't forget, very soon coming on the app, the ability to like and dislike RNSs in the morning, whenever they're released. I would much appreciate your help on this. If you just click the thumbs up or thumbs down button, it would help a lot. So it's going to be a new feature on the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.